Today on the DML News Podcast, we're going to give updates on Trump's trial in Manhattan. We're also going to show you a very hysterical video regarding Hunter Biden, Kamala Harris's new nickname as Mamala, and Nancy Pelosi going crazy on MSNBC. And speaking of crazy, plenty of video and stories regarding Colombia. It's basically an insurrection. We have this and more, and it's all unfiltered.
Dennis Michael Lynch gives you his word, and he will never let you down. He will always fight for America.
The only one who really puts his money where his mouth is Dennis Michael Lynch.
Hey, everybody. It's Denny here on the mic and Ryan behind on the controls. Ryan, maybe you want to show everyone your new haircut that you got this morning. It's nice and sharp. Definitely a good clean cut. And yeah, it's just us two today. As many of you know, DML had to go in for a very important dental surgery, but just to quell any fears, it went well. We actually got a very funny picture of him out of surgery. He's got like the whole little cap and gown thing going, and everything has gone well. And now it's just seeing what the reports are on what he got removed, but he's doing well. He's recovering. I mean, we'll see if maybe he's back late this week, and if not, definitely the start of next week. Speaking of something that's very important going on today, too, today, April 30th, is the last day for not site-wide, we already had that, but leftover DML CBD BOGO special that we're running. As for the products that are under that status, you got pet tinctures, you got the mini body oils, face serum, Premier and the Premier tinctures and the hand and foot cream. Those are the five that are currently left over in stock in inventory, and we're running the BOGO until late tonight. If you have any questions, you can always email Ashley, but if you go on the app, you'll see that the banner links right to the page. So I definitely jump on that, especially the face serum. I mean, I've been going to the beach a little bit more often and trying to get out in the sun more with my girlfriend, and I've just noticed that using the face serum after a long day in the sun, because the sun is good for you. You know, you're supposed to be out and trying to get the vitamin D as much as possible. But the face serum is definitely very soothing after a long day of being out in the Florida sun. So if you're in a southern state and, you know, these summer months are coming, I definitely recommend trying to get on the face serum. But all five, I mean, I literally use all five of those products. So today's the last day. I would definitely jump on it. Now, getting right into the show. Trump is back in Manhattan for the court case regarding the hush money trial. And yeah, here's the latest update in regards to that. Judge Juan Merchan ordered Trump to pay $9,000 in fines for violating his gag order. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg had accused the former president of 11 gag order violations, which would have totaled $11,000. The judge warned Trump that he could be jailed for further gag order violations. Trump, along with many legal experts, have maintained that the gag order Merchan imposed on April 1st is unconstitutional. Now, while that gag order is placed on Trump, the witnesses in the case are very much free to talk about Trump, whatever they would like to say. It is our First Amendment right to be able to say what we like to say, and yet Trump here is literally being gagged from speaking out on the case, speaking out on the unfair judgment that's been placed on him by Merchan and all these other crazy radicals that have targeted him throughout this campaign season. It's very infuriating. And of course, while $9,000, $11,000 may seem minuscule in the Trump-esque world of money, it is still just another blatant example of that they are at every turn and angle trying to debank and demonetize this man as much as possible. It's ridiculous. I'm glad he at least got to get out of New York for a little bit, which, speaking of, as we talked on the show yesterday and previously on past episodes, it does appear that Trump and DeSantis have finally made their amends. They just had their big meeting in Miami. And even though we did touch upon it yesterday as about, you know, what's DeSantis's role in all this? Is he just going to be fundraising on the campaign side, or could there be maybe a role for him in the works? Trump did confirm that the meeting went well on a Truth Social post that he released. I'm very happy to have the full and enthusiastic support of Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. We had a great meeting yesterday arranged by mutual friend Steve Witkoff at his beautiful Shell Bay Club in Hollywood, Florida. The conversation mostly concerned how we would work closely together to make America great again. We also discussed the future of Florida, which is fantastic. I greatly appreciate Ron's support in taking back our country from the worst president in the history of the United States. November 5th is a big day. I know we touched upon it, but it just makes me very happy to see that these two are coming together. It seems like DeSantis was the one to reach out. And truthfully, this is a good asset to have in Trump's war chest. I don't know how better to emphasize the point of what DeSantis has done for Florida, but also just raising the fact that while his campaign for the presidency wasn't successful, I think he did really rack up some good DeSantis support in people outside of Florida. There's no doubt in our minds here that DeSantis will try to make a run for 2028, but maybe he does have a role as VP or AG or somewhere in the Trump cabinet until then. Because, DeSantis's run for role as governor will be up, relatively soon in the next few years. So this could be a good opportunity to get him back into the Trump team in a very nice, casual, coming together kind of way. And we've always kind of said it here on the show, and it's been noted, Republicans have a bad track record of ever really coming together and trying to unify. If anything, that's always been the Democrats' big play. But maybe tides are turning, because I have a fantastic video here that Ryan's going to play for you guys of Nancy Pelosi. Oh, we all know her, trying to go on MSNBC and tout the fact that Biden, even though, as Trump confirmed, is the worst president of all time, under her view, he's the greatest because of all the jobs that she's been racking up, which we know is pretty false for two reasons. One, illegal immigration and how illegal aliens are taking those jobs. And two, a very big factor, we had a pandemic and those jobs were lost and then regained. But Biden likes to tally them as, hey, these are new jobs acquired. Well, Nancy tried pushing that talking point, and MSNBC's Katie Turr, surprisingly, wasn't going to let her have it. So, Ryan, can you play that clip?
And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And he has the worst.
I don't think that anybody can accuse me of that.
Wow. Nancy ain't happy. But again, I don't, even if you are an MSNBC shill over there, I think you can only take so much before you have to really kind of lay out the facts and kind of point to her of, spilling out this propaganda and just even the targeting there, Trump apologists. It's like, as soon as you don't agree with her, you're just labeled a certain label and apparently a detriment to the Democrat Party. That's not surprising. I mean, Ryan, when you see something like that, where Nancy is just getting all up in arms, does this just not tell you that the Democrats are beyond struggling? I mean, it's come to a point. Where can they actually defend Biden on anything?
They can't. And, what happened with Nancy Pelosi, that's how journalism should be. Whenever they go into their MSNBC or CNN, it's always friendly fire and they're playing along with the story. But I like to see that she came out and said, hey, it's because we had a pandemic and we lost all these jobs, and they came back when Biden was in office, which, we know that, people listening know that, but the average, Palestinian flag waver doesn't realize that. And they don't look deeper than the whole, liberal media saying, oh, he created 9 million jobs. So I like to see that, but it does show you that it's very tough to defend Biden when the facts are actually presented towards you.
You got a point there. And speaking of those pro-Palestinian flag bearers, we're actually going to get to them in a second. But You're right. They can only tout so much propaganda to a point where, even though they become so blatant about it, and even though they just become so, I don't know, ignorant to anything that's against their narrative, I would just say at this point, Nancy, quit with the segments. Quit going on MSNBC unless like you're being forced to. Because at this point, like I don't know how you could just tout those lies and not be just significantly called out each and every time when you are called out, because obviously Katie Turr there is just going to not take everything at your face value anymore. And maybe she gets in trouble off camera for that, but you know, it just becomes headache inducing having to listen to that and sit there and know in the back of your head, okay, like it's gone beyond just ideology. She is just spewing actual BS. Now, jobs in this country are an issue in itself with illegal immigration and obviously what the pandemic caused with it. But another sprouting issue from the pandemic has been basically the decrease in personal home ownership and the increase of Wall Street buyouts of residencies and home ownership. We have an interesting report here that Anita posted on the DML Report website. Wall Street went on a home buying spree. Now, more lawmakers want to stop it from ever happening again. Democrats in the U.S. Senate and House have sponsored legislation that would force large owners of single-family homes to sell houses to family buyers. A Republican's bill in the Ohio State Legislature aims to drive out institutional owners through heavy taxation. Lawmakers in Nebraska, California, New York, Minnesota, and North Carolina are among those proposing similar laws. The report explains that homeowner associations have been trying for years to stop investors from buying and renting out houses in their neighborhoods. Now, legislative proposals are underway to bring the practice to a halt. To further emphasize that entire point, we have a news clip here. It actually, again, MSNBC or NBC News, I promise you we're not affiliated. It just happens to be two back-to-back clips. But I got to give them the credit here. They did do a report on this 2 years ago about how these large investment groups are coming in, buying out these homes, using an algorithm to do so. So they're all in particular areas, usually in the suburbs around cities where employment and career opportunities are best held. And they're buying up these homes so that they can give these people, renters the opportunity to live in these homes. However, this is putting a strangle on family homeowner, on home buying ownership. So Ryan's actually going to play that news report for you guys right now.
Living room here.
For Tony Carr, the dance had become all too familiar. See a house?
I love this kitchen.
Fall in love, make an offer.
I was like, oh my God, this is the one. I want this one.
And then
my offer was declined.
The Navy veteran was pre-approved with a loan, hoping to move to Gwinnett County, Georgia, to be closer to her mother.
How many offers did you put down?
30.
She was offering full asking price, if not more, but kept losing out to all cash offers. And while Tony doesn't know who the buyers were, the Atlanta area is one of the hottest markets for large financial firms, often backed by private equity, that buy up and rent out single-family homes.
They're very aggressive. Their offers come in all cash. They come in sight unseen. So as soon as the house hits the market, you got an offer from them. Okay? And they're ready to close within a few days.
Atlanta real estate agent Erlene Holder says more than half her office's listings are going to investment companies. The companies typically use computer algorithms to identify desirable property so they can bid quickly. One of them is Invitation Homes, which owns more than 12,000 single-family houses in the Atlanta area, and nationwide, more than 81,000. The company points to the country's current rental housing shortage and says it provides choice and flexibility to the growing segment of Americans across all generations who are opting to rent instead of own. Three other large firms own more than 100,000 homes combined. One of them just announced a $5 billion fund to buy more.
The pandemic has really accelerated this business.
Ryan Dezember has been following this housing trend for years. He says for buyers, there are few legal options when they're competing with investors with deep pockets.
people start to think, well, what if I want to sell to one of them? What if they pay the, what if an investor pays the highest price for my house when it's time to sell? And they, people don't, when they get to thinking about it, they don't want to restrict their market.
So there's about 25 to 35% of the houses in this neighborhood are owned by Wall Street landlords.
It's why in places like this suburb outside Nashville, investors can build up huge inventory, says Tennessee State University professor Ken Shilton.
This is private equity coming in and mining equity out of communities and sending it back to people who are already wealthy.
Is this the American dream?
No.
After 30 offers, Tony Carr finally closed on a house by going farther away from where she'd hoped to be.
Everybody can't just walk in the door with $250,000 cash to buy a house. So my dream house, I can't have because I don't have $250,000 cash.
She may not, but big investment firms have billions. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News.
And again, here's another interesting tweet. This comes from Wall Street Apes regarding how we're seeing the era of the end of home ownership. Private home ownership is at extreme risk in America. New reports show economists have been lying to us all about the rate financial firms have been buying up single-family homes. They said only 18 to 23% of homes were being purchased, and by 2030, they would own 60%. That was a lie. In 2023, private equity firms purchased 44% of all of the single-family homes in America, which means death for our middle class. Estimates for 2024 private equity firms are again predicted to purchase another 44% of single-family homes. Now America has a lot of problems, but this should be a unifying problem that every single person who is not part of one of those private equity firms cares about, including current home ownerships. Look, this is definitely a bipartisan issue, because whether you are a Republican who just got married and is wanting to start a family, or whether you're a Democrat who just got married and is looking to start a family, part of that whole process to start a family is buying a home, because, you know, to try and do it in an apartment is difficult as is. Maybe you actually want to have a nice plot of land under your name. And yet, when you see that these equity firms, private equity firms, are going in and buying en masse, as you saw in that video, what they're doing in the suburbs around Atlanta and in around Nashville, which I have a little interesting report on that in a bit, it just becomes absurdly concerning, because how do you save the middle class if you're not even afforded the opportunity to own a home? Now, Ryan, I'm as you know, I'm not necessarily I'm a homeowner, but not one with a big plot of land. I just own an apartment. When you see this as someone your age, do you find this concerning that, you know, first they say it's only a minor percentage owned, and then you see that as of now, it's almost at 44%?
Yeah, I mean, this is where we're heading, because, you know, these institutions aren't stupid. They know what they're doing. And you know, when a house price on average is $400,000, our generation's not going to be able to afford it. So what do? They buy up the houses, and then it turns into a renter's market, not a buying market. So it's basically just going to start transferring over to, you're not owning a home, you're renting one. And that is a little concerning to me.
Big time. And look, you know, when it comes to the home ownership aspect too, it's all about, you know, region, because it's going to be a little hard to maybe commute to your job if you have to buy a home that, you know, is 45 minutes away. I mean, even the lady in the NBC video that we played, you know, her purpose was to be close to her mom. And the fact that she basically got balled out or bid out to then have to find something that was outside of that county is crazy. And look, another big issue when it comes to this, and I'll read this report. You know, I love Florida. Florida is probably up there as got to be the freest state in the union. And yet, because of these crazy policies in other states like New York and California, like such as the squatter's law, that's what I'm saying. It comes at all facets, whether it's, you know, you're being bid out by a private equity firm, or you got to worry about a squatter coming into your house and then, you know, all of a sudden taking part ownership because of the laws in place. So by that nature, what you're going to have is, yeah, you're going to keep the radicals, but the rational people are going to want to leave those states. And when they leave those states, they come to the states that are actually rational, such as Florida. But what happens? You get overcrowded populations in big areas, and you start kind of bellowing with pricing out of the affordability of what you can actually afford for a home or an apartment or a condo. And we've seen that in Florida. I guess what's becoming interesting is that it's just not Florida now. There's, you know, I think if you come to Florida and you realize, it's just a little too expensive at this point. Where do I go next? It looks like it's Tennessee. So I have something here from Fox News regarding that. Specifically around Nashville, because that's their big one. And Ryan and I have been to Nashville. It's a very fun city, but it's become more of not just a tourist place, but also a residency city. As Nashville becomes an increasingly popular destination for tourists and major companies, multiple local residents lamented the changing nature of their home. While Nashville has long been known as a popular destination for country music enthusiasts, barbecue lovers, and bachelorette parties, it has also emerged more recently as an American boomtown. The Wall Street Journal released a piece Sunday headlined, "Nashville is Booming. Locals Fret About Their Future in Music City," about how this change stirs mixed feelings among locals. Oracle founder Larry Ellison announced Tuesday that he plans to move the software giant's corporate headquarters to Nashville, Tennessee, which he added is at the center of the healthcare industry. While moving the company's world headquarters there may be an economic boon to the state, the question remains whether incoming tech companies will raise the local cost of living beyond what longtime residents can afford. The Journal wrote about how one resident fled from the city to the suburbs to avoid skyrocketing housing prices. Now, the rest of this article kind of debates the conflicting points of, okay, this is very good economic opportunity for Nashville, but then also this could be very detrimental for those that might get priced out and can't afford living there. So this really just goes into the grander landscape of how do we maybe fix what's broken in the other states and those cities so that we're not over flooding and inundating ourselves with people who want to move to opportunity. But as a result, when you have that overcrowding, this is the mixture that you get. Although I got to say, I can't blame them. Nashville is a really cool place. I mean, Ryan and I went last June. Ryan, what was your takeaway with Nashville?
If I didn't live in Florida,
you'd be living in Nashville.
Yeah. Tennessee, yeah. At least. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in my opinion, this should be, when it comes to home ownership, one of the biggest pressing issues that people around our age should be, protesting for. And yet, unfortunately, it is not. I think it is very fair to say that there is, at this point, an insurrection unfolding at Columbia University. Now, these pro-Palestinian protests have been awful at every campus across the country, and they are growing, which is concerning. And luckily, states like Texas and Florida are saying, heck no, don't you dare, and they are arresting these protesters. But those left-leaning states are permitting it, and it's become basically campus takeovers, and in some cases, flooding into public streets. But what's happening at Columbia, which I guess you can say at this point has been the catalyst, is just downright I don't even know what to describe it. It feels like something from a movie. Now, Ryan's going to overlay some of the videos here. Anita did a great report of accumulating of what's going on, but you'll see, you got protesters here breaking in through windows. You got protesters climbing through the windows of different residences hall, breaking in. You got students picking up the tables, these picnic park tables, and trying to toss them at the doors of these buildings. Now, I do have a video here that we're going to play for you, at least the beginnings of it. It's basically these two white students, white male students. You'll see in the video, they're both wearing blue t-shirts, trying to defend Hamilton Hall, which is a big dormitory at Columbia, from all of the protesters. And I won't play the whole clip, but we'll play the beginning. And it just shows that they're trying to stand their ground. And you'll watch these, students basically shove themselves in and try to push them out. And one of the students does, and he's trying his best not to defend himself. And they start yelling at him like, "If you touch us, it's assault. If you touch us, it's assault." And yet they're the ones assaulting. And one girl in the video even says, "Don't ruin your whole life over this." They're trying to be American and defend what, you know, they're paying tuition for, and yet here they are destroying public or school property. So, Rye, let's play that clip.
All right, red team, blockade. Ready? Circle blockade around these three. We're going to move them out. Let's go.
Another human chain.
Get someone. Wrap around. Get inside.
Grab back up by the side of the door. This isn't how you do that. Come on. It's,
yeah. Yes, it is. It's 100%.
I got it all on video. Don't worry.
Sir, this is 100% assault.
Can you get them to chill out?
This is
100%
assault.
Anyone.
Is someone recording this?
I got it.
This is 100% assault. What is your name?
All right, walk out.
What is your name?
Red team. Free, free, free Palestine.
Hey, chill.
Can you walk around that side? Please, everybody, you told me to do this.
Can we get back up behind us? Red team behind us.
It's too much.
Circle up and red team behind us. Let's go.
Watch the step.
We got it. Let's go.
Are you physically assaulting
us? Red team, we got it. Red team, let's go. Hold on tight. Watch out. Be safe. Move slow.
So regarding this insurrection, here's a little update and report on it. A huge mob of mass pro-terror rioters violently broke into an academic building at Columbia University and seized it early Tuesday, rebranding the iconic hall named after founding father Alexander Hamilton and draping it with a Palestinian flag. Dozens stormed into Hamilton Hall and sealed themselves in shortly before 1 a.m., with some using metal barricades, chairs, and tables to block others from getting inside, as footage was shown on social media. One shocking video captured a violent hammer-wielding demonstrator smashing through a glass panel door, which you guys just saw. Now, the president of Colombia had issued that any further protesting, that there would start being suspensions, and yet I don't see that being laid out. But here is their official update that they posted to their Twitter account, which was today. Early this morning, a group of protesters occupied Hamilton Hall on the Morningside campus. The safety of every single member of this community is paramount. Members of the university community who can avoid coming to the Morningside campus should do so. Essential personnel should report to work according to university policy. Access to campus has been limited to students residing in residential buildings on campus and employees who provide essential services to campus buildings, labs, and residential student life. We will continue to update you with more information should there be additional changes to campus access today. So if I got this straight, Columbia has made their students who don't want to participate in any of this BS go virtual. They've denied access or cut off access to some faculty to certain buildings. They claim they're going to start doing expulsions and suspensions, and yet that has not been the case. Public safety can't be seen anywhere. All these students are they have fully taken over. This is an insurrection. We're going to all, or I shouldn't say we, liberals are going to all jump out of their pants over what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. And yet here is an actual institution being run by students that aren't even fighting for anything relative to America. You know, I mean, you see it in the videos that Ryan's playing. They're all shouting the free, free Palestine. It's so absurdly ridiculous. But what can we expect at this point? I don't know how this ends other than, I mean, this is in New York, so I don't expect any actual action to happen there. But how does this not end with maybe the school being completely shut down for the long haul? I mean, the summer's coming up and classes will be out. But if this is running on Soros-funded money, you really just got to ask yourself, when does it end? When Soros decides to lay off the faucet, or when the campus is just completely taken over? And there was even a report that a few janitors were locked in that building, basically held against their will. I don't know what's I mean, Ryan, what do you think? Is this this doesn't seem like a peaceful protest to me.
No, it's not peaceful, and I just hope, you know, Columbia is not going to go out of business, but I just hope employers, you know, when they see their degrees from that school, they just, you know, throw them to the wayside and not even give them a opportunity at that point.
Definitely agree. And I think this is all very just reflective of our country's leadership at this point. Because I think if Trump was in office, that this just would not be happening whatsoever, or not to this extent. But it's literally just blatant leadership and lack of discipline, I would also say. Because, you know, if I had a student going to that school, which I don't think I would allow my kid, I would demand a full refund on tuition. I would pull my kid out, whether they were, I mean, they would be Christian Catholic, but still, like, how long until they turn on them? You know, it's Jewish students now, Christians tomorrow. And I would make sure that if I knew anyone who was considering that school, I'd say, don't give them a dime. You know, you want to run the risk of the safety of your kid or someone to who may want to choose to work there. But like I said, if you're expecting any reflective leadership, well, one, you got Joe Biden, who, you know, barely knows what's going on, so I don't expect really any hard-hitting points from him. And then you have Miss Kamala Harris, who is just way too busy either talking about reproductive rights or going on very cringy talk show segments such as Drew Barrymore's, which I watched myself, and it's major cringe, so I feel like you guys have to also bear witness to it. But here's a little clip where Kamala Harris talks about how people love the way she laughs. I don't think I've ever heard anyone tell me that they like Kamala Harris's laugh, but here she is trying to make that argument to Drew Barrymore.
You were asking me earlier about what it means to be, like, the first woman. And, you know, it's funny because people still got to get used to this, right? I mean, my staff, for example, sometimes they'll show me little things that just amuse me. Like, apparently, some people love to talk about the way I laugh.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I love your laugh.
Well, let me just tell you something. I have my mother's laugh. Oh. And I grew up around a bunch of women in particular who laughed from the belly. Yeah. They laughed. They would sit around the kitchen and drinking their coffee, telling big stories with big laughs. I'm never going to be... I'm not that person. And I think it's really important for us to remind each other and our younger ones, don't be confined to other people's perception about what this looks like and how you should act in order to be, right? It's really important. It's important.
I love your laugh, and I love that message.
Wow. As always, she usually ends with a word salad, because I have no idea what the hell she was even talking about there, but everyone just clapped anyways, like happy little seals. But if you think that was cringy, this part of her interview with Drew Barrymore has to be the worst, and this is actually Drew Barrymore committing the cringe. She basically recommends that our current vice president needs to step up because the country's hurting, and that she needs to go from Kamala to Mamala.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Ugh, yikes. That was disgusting. You know, one, she's not even a mom, by the way. She's just a stepmom. And two, Mamala to the country. Where has she been as Mamala for the last 4 years, other than hardly making any appearances, doing anything legislatively active or executively active? She has just literally been the identity politics poster of the VP, because she's the first, black woman vice president. Right. Do you think Kamala should be our Mamala?
No. I mean, I think they're the reason why the Middle East is in turmoil. Ukraine is on the brink of capitulating. And Taiwan looks like it's primed to get invaded any day now. So,
but we need a Mamala. I mean, she's advocating for, you know, nonstop abortion, but she really needs to be our Mamala. You know, I'm just going to maybe wonder that.
We need her gone.
Yeah, we need her gondola. Yeah, we need her gondola. Yeah, I'm just going to give it the benefit of the doubt that Drew Barrymore's writers didn't create that one. That was her ad-libbing because, again, like, you know, great actress, I guess, but total leftist liberal propagandist. I mean, she just sits there on the couch getting all cozy with Kamala, which you can just see that is not Harris's thing whatsoever. And that whole Mamala thing, she didn't even know how to respond. I think she knew, like, oh my God, this just makes my image worse. But the only person at this point who could have a worser image, and this is where we will start to end our show, is Hunter Biden. I really don't know somebody who could have a more tainted, destroyed, and basically just awful, awful image than that man. We have a funny video in regards to Hunter, but just as a little update, Hunter is apparently threatening to sue Fox News. And this comes out of Breitbart. Hunter Biden's legal team asked Fox News last week to remove hacked and intimate images from its news site or risk a lawsuit. Although Hunter claims the images were hacked, the Justice Department confirmed in a January report that the contents on his laptop matched what authorities obtained via a search warrant of Hunter's iCloud. The DOJ also stated that Hunter left that laptop at a computer store for repair before it was turned over to the FBI. So you have Hunter here trying to throw a lawsuit at Fox News for showing photos that weren't actually hacked or obtained illegally. They were permitted based on Hunter's own idiocy by leaving that laptop and then the DOJ search warrant permitting those contents to be out there. Now, that laptop has obviously stirred a whole lightning rod of issues for Hunter Biden. But while it's been debated of, okay, is this going to really be, you know, career ending for the Bidens? I mean, it's proven not to be. Joe Biden's still in office and there hasn't been any lightning chain consequences as a result of it. But it does just produce some, I guess, funny moments in American culture. Our audience, you guys, you're probably not familiar with Afro Man. He is, Ryan, I don't even know how you would describe him. He's not even really a successful rapper. He's just kind of one of those guys. He had that one hit wonder, sort of say, back in the 90s. It's the song called Because I've Got High, or Because I Got High. Oddly enough, he used to perform at a bar near my old me and Ryan's old college. It was like the one time he kind of came out of hiding. And again, I could not name you one song of his other than that song, Because I Got High. However, he decided to do a 2024 remix and basically dedicated it to Hunter Biden. So Ryan is going, if you're not a rap or a hip hop fan, it's probably not for you. But if you are someone who likes to listen to lyrics, this is definitely worth the listen to. So Ryan's going to play about 2 minutes of this song.
Hey, yo, Hunter, roll up another one of them congressional blunts, brother. He was gonna get his laptop fixed, but Hunter got high. He wasn't gonna show all them pics, but Hunter got high. He should have let Hillary bleach his whole hard drive. Why, man? Yeah, hey. Gonna mess with the hoes, but Hunter got high. He was gonna take them all out on the boat, but Hunter got high. He's the smartest man Joe ever knew in his life. Yeah, to Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. La da da da. thought he was gonna go visit his dad, but Hunter got high. He thought he had a secret stash, but Hunter got high. The White House got shut down, we all know why. On, yeah, Hunter got high, Hunter got high, Hunter got high. He never could pack worth a f***, Hunter got high. Now he gets a half a million up. Damn, that's high.
That's high to the buck. That's higher than me.
Biden never used to start with BUI. Yeah, to Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Ukraine wasn't part of the plan till Hunter got high. China wasn't that big of a fan till Hunter got high.
Right, I gotta say it's got a nice ring to it. I think I like this version better than the original.
It's catchy.
It's catchy. Yeah, it's good. Hunter Biden, man, your image is done. I don't think it ever really was high up there, but this is a nail in the coffin for sure. Well, I think we're gonna end it there for today. So thank you guys for tuning in. We'll give more updates. I'll be back tomorrow, but we'll give more updates on how DML is recovering. And like I said at the beginning of the show, we have those products that are listed right now for BOGO. Pet tincture, the Miracle Me Minis, face serum, premier tinctures, and the hand and foot creams. And for today's Team DML blessing, I would like to give it to Ryan Duterte. And I hope you all have a great day. Thanks, everybody.
Get the Dennis Michael Lynch podcast every day by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And download the DML News app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store for breaking news, merchandise, films, exclusive content, and Team DML.